It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, July the 5th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Well, history always has a tendency to repeat itself, and you can learn from history, and that's why we always try to respect the history of the game as well as the New York Mets here on this show. But great job by Keith Rad earlier today. If you didn't listen on the radio, have a chance. It's over on social media. Channeling his inner Bob Murphy, Mets win a crazy ball game. Braves nearly come back from a seven-run deficit in the ninth inning, and the Mets hold on to win 10-9. And back, about 36 years ago, and I very, very vividly remember. I remember listening to this game on the radio, a summer night, Mets in contention, 1990, big ball game. And I remember because what I would do sometimes back then, I didn't, and I've said this many times, I didn't have cable TV up until, you know, the early 90s, like 92-ish. We weren't wired in our neighborhood in Brooklyn. Think about how connected we are today with social media and apps and streaming. And you couldn't get any cable in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, where I grew up, because we weren't wired for it. And it's amazing when you really think about it. You think about that whole thing. So anyway, the point is I listened to a ton of baseball on the radio earlier in my baseball life, late 80s, early 90s Mets. You probably got, you know, 90 to 100 games on TV. It started to dwindle a little bit, but you got a good 60 to 70 ball games that were on at that time, Sports Channel. So I was listening to Bob Murphy win the damn thing, Mets, you know, big lead against the Phillies in the ninth inning, and they peck away, they peck away, they peck away the Phillies. And I think there was like bases loaded, two outs. Tommy heard a line drive that somebody that you'll probably never in a million years remember playing shortstop for the Mets. His name was Mario Diaz. That summer, Kevin Elster was starting to have some shoulder issues, and I don't know if he was injured or hurt, but Howard Johnson was his shortstop a big chunk of that year, and Hojo did as good as he can at the position, but defensively not who you wanted in a big spot in the ninth inning. Mario Diaz, a glove guy, and the Mets win that ball game. Similar as Devin Williams strikes out former Met Dom Williams. Would have been poetic justice, former Met Dom Smith, who's seemed to have reinvented his career in a role that I think he's better suited from off the bench. Anytime he gets extended playing time, he gets exposed. We saw that when he was with the Mets. But it would have been poetic justice if he had what really would have been a synopsis of the 2026 season. But this show's not about today's ball game. This show's about the Mets and where they're at. And as we head a month away, less than a month away, to the trade deadline, Mets significantly under 500, not even close to their next competition in the division, the Nats and the Marlins. They're bringing up the rear. They're probably headed to a 90-loss season. At this point, as you head to the back half of the year, 90, 95. I don't think they'll lose 100. We'll see how they pull the team apart after August 1st. But you're looking at a probably one of the worst seasons the Mets have had in about 10 years, really, in about 10 years. And it's a huge step back in the Steve Cohen era. And before the holiday weekend, I had reacted to Cohen's conversation with John Heyman and Joel Sherman over on the New York Post podcast. You could listen to that. But the synopsis was, I thought Cohen was very accountable. I thought Cohen was very honest and transparent. I think if you had any thoughts of Cohen not caring or losing interest or being tone deaf to the situation, that was alluded. That was knocked away really quick. You know, there was no allusions to that. I think he is going to keep an eye on things and poke his head in a little bit to make sure that with Stearns and the Stearns front office, things are heading in the right direction. He's committed to Stearns. And then I think we left with a big question mark about who potentially could be the manager going forward. Now, I'm not going to get into all of that, because what we want to start today's show is we want to start looking towards the deadline, and we have some real interesting information that Will Salmon at The Athletic put out earlier in the week, or probably right before the holiday. And then in the back half, before we take some comments from you, the fans, go to the mailbag, I also want to address Eric Chavez's comments. His comments came out earlier in the week before the Cohen podcast, and I think a lot of what pushed Cohen to potentially maybe even pull up his comments, because he had said about a week ago, hey, I'll be speaking soon, is that, I mean, now Chavez's comments about Stearns are out there, so Cohen had to really come out there, quell all the noise, especially with the signs at Citi Field and the fire Stearns, and hopefully now the fan base, knowing that he's here, there's this loud minority of the fan base that thinks that by making noise and ruining everybody's experience at the ballpark, and it generally being annoying, because they grow up in a protest culture. You don't get what you want, you protest. You know, everything is about, we got to protest to get what we want, when you really don't know what you want. You really don't know how to run a baseball team, but you're angry and hurt, so let's protest and be obnoxious. Because unfortunately in this society, in the modern world, in the last 15 to 20 years, people tend to give in to the mob, to shut them up. That's been a losing strategy on many fronts throughout the history of the world, much less baseball. So I'm glad Cohen said, pipe down. And if you don't want to show up, you don't want to spend money, you don't want to pay attention to the product, I don't blame you. But you're not going to run around yelling and screaming for something that you don't know what you're talking about anyway. But as far as the manager, I know there was some information that came out from a very unreliable mainstream media source, USA Today, Bob Nightingale, about Carlos Beltran being the favorite to be the next manager of the Mets. That sounds like industry speculation. I know that David Ross and Albert Pujols and Alex Cora have all said glowing things about the job. And I know that I've been on record saying, hey, this is a job that's not going to be as desired throughout the league. Now, I think as a manager's position, it's still a desirable job because it's New York. I think from a front office perspective, and I think from a manager's perspective, I think it depends on where you are in your career. I mean, David Ross wants another opportunity. Alex Cora will have the choice, so I don't know if he's going to jump so quickly on it. Beltran, it's a matter of, do you want to extend the Stearns front office with Beltran? I'll tell you why in a minute. Might be Beltran. And then as far as an outsider like Pujols, some mixed reviews maybe out there about Pujols. Who even knows if he could be a manager? Just because you're a great Hall of Fame player, that doesn't mean anything. But knowing that Stearns is going to be around, and knowing that the trade deadline is not going to be a complete sell-off, if you listen to Will Salmon's or Red's Will Salmon's article, not going to be a complete sell-off. They may bring in big league talent. If they have any players that are under control, they're going to ask for a pretty high price. And I don't think they're just going to gift the relievers like A.J. Minter and Brooks Raley or a starter like Freddie Peralta. They're just going to gift them to get payroll off the books. I just don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to try, as the report suggested, to get the best prospect possible. But at this point, if you have Freddie Peralta and you're going to get a prospect in the 15 to 20 range from another team to see if, who says, all right, Freddie Peralta could come in here. And last year, if you remember, there was tons of over the last couple of years, John Flaherty, when he struggled at times. I'm trying to think. There were some other players that have been traded. Merrill Kelly, guys that are okay, but got a decent prospect return. So we'll see what happens. But at this point, I don't think the Mets are just going to do that. Now, knowing that Stearns is going to be around a couple of years, why it would make sense that it wouldn't be a massive shift away from some kind of competition in 27 and some kind of competitive team in 28. We don't know what 28 is going to look like. Cohen already said he's fairly confident that 27 is going to be under the old rules. And you have some bones here on this roster. You have some interesting players. This is not a roster devoid of talent. I know that fans like to lionize when things are bad. It's not devoid of talent. It's got some gaps. It's got some holes. And right now, it's got a cloud over its head, this roster. This roster, this season, and maybe it was inevitable after all the bad juju and karma that was put out there. And I'm not saying this was the wrong move, with Alonso leaving, with Diaz leaving, with Nimmo being traded, with McNeil being traded. The whole transition from one era of Mets baseball to another, maybe this was inevitable that you had to kind of go through this cleansing. But I don't think the roster is devoid of talent. And knowing that Stearns is on the clock, and we talked about it last Sunday, the next 24 months, this time, 2 years from now, and Cohen basically verified, and I had said this last Sunday, even before I heard Cohen's comments, that yes, he's going to live out his contract, but let's go into year five. Let's see what's going on before I make a decision on extending him or committing to this front office even further at that point. So he's got 24 months. So it would make sense that Beltran, who has been around the organization for a while, was supposed to be the manager pre-COVID. We all know what happened with the sign stealing, and he had to step down and kind of go into hiding, but still has had some hands in the pot here. And I think a bigger hand in the pot than you think. When Chavez, and when I talk about his comments later on, talked about Soto and Soto, some assistant general manager coddling Soto in the back in the batting cage in between at bats, I firmly believe, and I don't have any information about this, and it's never been out there, that was Beltran. I really do. I think that was Beltran. I can't prove it. I don't have sourced information, but it just makes a ton of sense. It would be the kind of guy that would understand what Soto's going through since he went through it. Beltran's number is going to be retired later this summer. So what cherry on top? You retire his number, and then he becomes the manager next year. Now, that shouldn't be the reason why you bring him in, but I think Stearns bringing somebody in, because Beltran would come in. Beltran wouldn't be Andy Green, where it's just an interim, but Beltran would be somebody that potentially, if Stearns was fired in 2 years, and let's say Beltran has a 3 or 4 year deal, the new regime could come in and maybe work with him a little bit. He's not a complete new hire outside the organization. And that's the other thing. If I'm an Alex Cora and I get a 4 or 5 year deal, which is what he's going to want, he's going to want to get paid like, and maybe get paid like counsel. And, you know, David Ross probably wouldn't care. He probably would take a shorter term deal. The thing is, if Stearns is gone in 2 years, you're bringing a new front office in. They're going to want their own person. It's like Buck Showalter all over again. Beltran makes it easier. Cora's not coming here unless there's some idea of who he's going to work for. He's not coming here. And baseball managers, by comparison of their NFL and NBA brethren, they don't get paid nearly as much. Council was like the first big payday for a manager out there. I could see Cora wanting something like that. And I don't think he comes here. He could say, you know, all he wants on the podcast, on these Latin sports podcasts, he could say all he wants about how much the Mets job is great, and it is. And I think as much as this is a toxic situation and there's the weight of the uniform and the fan base is so beaten down that they sometimes don't always behave themselves and make it easy. Despite all that, this is a fun place when you're winning. City Field's a great place when you're winning. The fans, I don't think there'll be the level of unifying the city and everybody getting together like what we saw at the Knicks over the last couple of months, but it'll be a version of it. And I think that the fans will be far more passionate and hungry than what you'd see across town in the Bronx. So that's what I'll say about the manager. I think everything's got to align with this two-year window. And I do think Cohen will want a bit of a name and a splash. I don't think he's going to want to go out and get another Carlos Mendoza, no-name, well-respected bench coach or college coach or some kind of analytics hire that is an extension of the front office, because, I mean, Andy Green would be perfect for that if he wanted the job. And if you're going to go that route, Beltran actually solves both of those problems. He's been part of the front office. He played the game. I think he can now, will he be his own man and be able to run his own clubhouse? And to a certain degree, I've been told as I talk to people around the sport that maybe it's a little overrated, the front office and their involvement in the game in terms of how the game is run. I mean, look, there's a blueprint. They give information and data, how the manager and how comfortable the manager feels implementing that. I firmly believe we need to get to a point that the manager in the dugout is, I don't want to say a personality. You're never going to have another Tommy Lasorda or a Billy Martin type, Earl Weaver, guys like that, long, long, long gone. Can you get it back to the days, to a certain degree, when it was like Tony La Russa and Buck Showalter and guys like that? Davey Johnson, guys like that. You know, maybe Davey was a little bit too combative, and I know you have to work with the front office, but you have to get to that point. But now when you look at what's ahead, so the deadline is upon us. It's a month away. We're going to have a All-Star break is right here, and the Mets are going to be playing out the string. So the real excitement and conversation and engagement, which is really fading fast. I read all the comments on social media. I see how hard it is for fans to watch these games. I know, beautiful summer day. You don't want to be going out. Yesterday, Mets are on 4th of July getting blown out. What are you going to do? Go out and watch some fireworks, enjoy some food and your friends and your family. You're going to sit and be miserable watching the Mets have, you know, position player pitch. I mean, the answer is easy. So they're not selling off. They're targeting the best minor league prospects, according to Salmon. Anybody who has control is not going to be cheap. So that's going to be the Weavers, Luke Weavers, and Brazenbaan, and Devin Williams. Maybe one of the kids like Badiel Alvarez. Sean Manaea, I mean, owed another $19 million, $20 million next year. Maybe if you pay down the salary, you get a better prospect. Maybe you, if the other team takes the money, maybe you are okay with getting a lesser return or no return, maybe. Kodai Senga, who is starting, we speculated this, and we talked about this over Beyond the Mic, pitching better out of the bullpen. Now, can he get to the point where instead of pitching two or three innings and being on a schedule, can he be more of a one-in reliever? Maybe you could get some value out of him. Does another team see something in that where they say, let me bring him in and take on the salary? Again, those two are the guys I think that potentially you'd be okay with no return, just getting the money off the books. Going to be hard, but it'd be interesting if another team sees anything, especially if the Mets are in a position like, hey, I don't need to trade these guys. I'm not desperate to dump salary. Not that anybody wants to help Steve Cohen, but you get where I'm going. Now, Holmes, Peralta, Raley, Minter, I brought that up. Those are guys that are going to be free agents. I mean, Holmes has the option, assuming he's healthy, and I don't know if he'll get a start before the deadline. And it may not matter. If a team feels he's healthy or he's going through a minor league rehab stint, they may deal with him right then and there. That will be interesting because I personally believe out of those guys, I'd bring Raley back on an extension. I'd bring Holmes back, and I would make him my veteran anchor with these young pitchers on a long-term deal. I think he's done an outstanding job. Minter is a guy I would trade. I don't know how much he has left in the tank. He had a pretty serious shoulder injury. He's evolved as a pitcher. He's getting guys out. He's a guy, I mean, you see what you get. You're not going to get a lot out of him. It'd be funny. We're going to send him back to Atlanta maybe. Not that the Braves would give the Mets anything, but you know that one I don't see. But out of those guys, Raley and Holmes, I would definitely like. And if that means not trading them and maybe working out an extension, I would love to see that. Now, Peralta is going to be interesting, like I said, because why not, if you're going to be under the old rules, at least for 27, put the qualifying offer out there. Maybe he takes it. Doubtful. But then you get some compensation. You certainly could really hurt his market. And this is where the lockout's going to be kind of weird. Like, you're under the old rules right after the World Series, or are they going to, like, just stop everything? Like, how? Because last time, it was December 1st, so there was some activity leading past into Thanksgiving before, after 21 going into 22 for the lockout. And it's so, you know, it's funny. Things have been so wild, and I remember that month they were looking for a GM because Zach Scott wasn't coming back, and it was the whole month of Billy Epler and Billy Epler taking over. It's like this whole Cohen era, it's like year six of the Cohen era has been flying by. So I can't even remember how we went through that lockout and how we kind of thought about talking baseball, because this one could get a little bit ugly. But this is not going to be like 2023. They're open to adding, and that's where it'll be interesting. Are they open to adding major league talent? Are there going to be teams looking to dump some salary leading into this lockout? What does that mean? That's an interesting statement. What, you know, is there a contract that they want to take on that's not onerous, that potentially could help them, players that could help them? Because they want to compete. They want to have a competitive team in 2027. Stearns needs competitive teams the last 2 years of his contract. And the thing about Cohen being involved, and I think that always brings up, are you going to see another Pete Crow Armstrong for Javier Baez trade? I don't think Cohen would sign off on something like that. I really don't. But when you start to look at what the core should be, what is it? Do the Mets have a core of players that could lead to competitiveness? I see you have Lindor and Soto. I know we're back to talking about their relationship. Probably the biggest thing about the divide between these two guys, I think Chavez kind of leaked it with Soto and how he handled the early tenure with maybe being a little bit insulated and focusing on himself and his struggles and his transition to New York, where Lindor is more of a gregarious, open guy. Maybe he felt a little threatened, Lindor, about Soto coming in, getting significantly more money, and basically be given the keys to the franchise after he was the guy that year after the season. He had just pretty much hit the two biggest home runs, or some of the biggest home runs in team history, to get the Mets into the postseason and into the championship series. So I could see that. But in addition to those two guys, which it sounds like those two guys are going to be here at least till, and I know some Heyman threw out some little things out there, little treasure hunt maybe for you to think and say, hey, maybe Lindor is available. I just don't see how with that contract. I mean, Lindor has 5 years left at an average of $32 million a year. I just don't know. Is that a good deal? Would somebody sign him to that at this point in his career? Lindor is right now, let's see, age. Let me make sure I get this right. He's age 32, so you're paying for age 33 to 37. Probably a reasonable amount of money for that. Don't know if anybody would take that on. I believe he has a no trade anyway. But so let's just go take what the owners said at face value. Lindor and Soto are going to be here. Clearly, Benj, Ewing, McClain, Scott. I'll put Zach Thornton in there. And maybe on their peripheral, Alvarez and Beatty on the outside. I don't know how. I think Alvarez is a better shot to be part of this core solution, even though he drives me bananas, than Beatty. And then after that, on the offensive side, the real question is, what do you do with Bo Bichette? Because Bo Bichette, to me, right in that lane of in the prime, a different type of hitter than anything else they have, I think he's a good guy. He's not a bad third baseman. I don't want to get into DRS and defensive runs. My eyes say he's not a bad third baseman. I'd like to see more of him at second. We don't know what Simeon's future lies. When you start getting into hip issues and stuff like that, who knows? Maybe health-wise he's done. The Mets just wanted to get out of that Nimmo contract, so they took a sunk cost. They took basically nothing back. They dumped the contract in that. So maybe Bichette could play second. I haven't seen him enough at the position. I know he played it in the World Series, and Toronto was comfortable enough playing him that in the biggest stage of all. So I got to think he's passable on that thing. But right now you're looking at Stearns with his 2 years left before his decision on his future has to be made. You have this five-year window with Lindor and Soto's contract. Soto goes to 2030. He's not going anywhere before that, and the Mets control that opt-out, so we'll see. So right now, the conversation has to be, you have your core players that you want to hold on to. You're not going to get those guys touched. Right now, anything you do has to improve the assets that bring talent in to potentially make trades in the future to add to that core. It's not about just ripping the thing down, saving money on payroll, or anything along the lines. It's out there. The information. Salmon's already given you the blueprint. And I think the Mets are leaking because, or maybe it's a competitive team that's been in talks, because they want to put this out there so we could stop the nonsense. We could stop the speculation. We could stop the media doing their rebuild plans or trying to gift players to other teams they like for nothing. I mean, we went through that one time when the DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Daly, the media, trying to figure out ways to gift them to the Yankees that, during those couple of years when the Yankees were trying to win a championship. They're not interested in that. So when you look at that, that's where you're at. Now, whether Bo Bichette is part of that, I mean, since June 1st, his numbers have been very good. So and whether or not he wants to opt in at $42 million, he probably wants to get a longer-term deal. I have to think that with the uncertainty of the offseason, he'd at least opt in for next year. I'd have to think that. But that's where you build. Now, what I would do is this, and it's pretty simple. Everybody else, and Polanco, I didn't really even mention, but I'm assuming Polanco, you're going to see him at some point. Maybe he's healthy. We really don't know how this Achilles situation is going to be managed. Is this going to be something that has to be managed for the rest of his career? Is it something that with rest is healed, or maybe that with some kind of program that leads into next year, he'll be in a better position next year. But we'll see. He's on his rehab stint, so we're going to see him soon. But you're going to build around that core. I suggest re-signing Holmes to anchor the staff. I would do that before I trade him. I talked to him about a contract extension. That's what I would do at the deadline. I wouldn't be looking to trade him. Now, clearly you listen. Maybe someone throws some kind of wild trade at you. He goes there. Does he opt out and then you resign him? That's a possibility. But I think if you want to keep him and want to have a better chance of keeping him, negotiate the extension now. Don't trade him, make him fall in love with another team and then have to compete in the offseason, especially in a truncated offseason. We'll see what Peralta could get on the market. I personally think the guy is hurt. I know that this whole arm angle thing has become a story. We were one of the first ones here at this show to talk about it a couple of weeks back. Now it's become a thing. This data is there. I believe it's his lowest arm angle since he had some shoulder issues back in 2022. I believe something's going on under the hood. I just think it is. I don't think it's any coincidence. Because if it was as simple as, hey, your arm angle's too low, it's 5 degrees lower than normal, they would have fixed it by now. And I don't think this is just your regular New Yorkitis either. The guy didn't forget how to pitch. I know that there's always that Mets curse or yoke or weight of the uniform thing, but so what? We'll see at this point. Now, you don't have a bad, and the pitching hasn't been great. The start has been spotty because of injuries. But when you look at, hypothetically, a rotation the rest of the year of Peralta, Holmes, McClain, Scott, and a vet. Now, let's say Peralta hypothetically takes the qualifying offer and tries to rebuild his value. I think it's unlikely. But after a season like this, assuming he's not hurt, it's possible. That rotation going into next year with another veteran in the back end, and then you try to see where you are with Winiger and Thornton and Tong, it's not a bad rotation. And I think having Holmes and signing Holmes to an extension versus trading him for maybe prospects, especially with the free agent market not being great, I'm thinking that with Cohen saying that they're already at $300 million in payroll next year, I don't know how his appetite for Tarek Skubal will be. I don't know how they sell Tarek Skubal to New York, assuming that Dodgers are involved in it. Maybe the Yankees get involved in it. I don't think the Mets have the cachet they had 2 years ago when they were going after Soto. So that'll be interesting how that all works out. To me, it's about the money. But when you get to that level and you're competing against those kind of teams, assuming they're in the mix, the money's going to relatively be the same. The Mets aren't going to be blowing anybody away unless the big-name teams, the Yankees, the Dodgers, I'll throw the Phillies in there too, maybe that they don't have that appetite, or maybe the owners decide to cut back. And this would be a situation where you probably don't get him resolved till after the lockout. So he's not going to sign something quick and early. So you can't even really think about him. So a realistic rotation is what I just laid out to you at that point. I think you re-sign Raley to a 2-year deal. You still have Williams, Weaver, and Brazenbaum. I assume that unless they get blown away, those guys have control. They're not just going to dump them. If you want to be competitive, a bullpen is critical. And the Mets have built a pretty damn good bullpen. I know it didn't look like it today in the ninth inning, but sometimes things are about, they get wonky sometimes. And even Brazenbaum, but the thing is, you saw Brazenbaum, when he gets rattled. And then, you know, you have Austin Warren. Perez is a lefty that maybe the Mets have figured something out about. Kids from the minors, you got Ben Simon, Saul Garcia, Ross and Lambert have been on the back of a milk carton, but they're out there. Dedeniel Nunez is making his return. We'll probably see him before the summer is out. Nate Lavender, they've got some, it sounds like they got some names down in the minors. They're trying to figure it out. And remember, one of these starters like Tong, to me, maybe the future's in the bullpen. We don't know. Maybe the future is the bullpen. So offensively, a core of Lindor, Soto, Bichette, Baines, Ewing, with maybe your Alvarez, Torrens at catcher. Need a couple more bats out of that. I know first base is glaring. I know the Pete fanboys are all going to be, you know, Mike, see, this is why you need Pete. It's over. The Mets didn't want to commit long-term to him. Could they use Pete Alonso in this lineup? Sure. Pete Alonso with Polanco, a healthy Polanco in this lineup, is a damn good lineup. And Pete's one of the best right-handed RBI bats that are out there. But I don't know what Pete's going to be in 3 years. I want him to re-sign Pete. The Mets are not limitless with their budget, and they didn't see a value in years, you know, 3, 4, 5. Are they going to be right, wrong? We'll see about that. But when you look and you go into this deadline, what will be interesting is that I think the Mets are not going to be this fire sale seller. I think they're going to be exactly what we thought, a hybrid buyer seller. I wouldn't be so convinced that they're going to sell just to sell. And the situation with Max Scherzer and Verlander, I think where those guys wanted to compete towards the end of their career, the Mets weren't sure what 2024 was going to look like. They were owed a lot of money. The team was unsure of how good they'd be going forward. The team was right, and they convinced those guys, and they got something out of it. Now, they had to pay down the salary. They got some kind of asset out of it. Now, Acuña turned out to be not much, and Luis Robert, who they got him, not much. On the Verlander side, we don't know what Ryan Clifford is all about. Drew Gilbert got them Tyler Rogers, who had a really good 2 months. Unfortunately, he's in Toronto now, doing really well. So they didn't get much out of it. But, you know, that's not what you want. You don't want to have lottery ticket prospects and just gift players some of your veterans, especially if you want to compete next year. Because the Mets are not saying like they were when Epler was around. They're not saying anything about not competing next year. So we're setting up the trade deadline. That's what I would do. I don't really want to see, because now, look, if you put something to my head and said, look, gun to your head, lack of a better word, proverbial gun to your head. I know that's not a popular, you got to be careful how you say those things today in today's world. You know, hey, Mike, you got to do a rebuild. Can you live with it? Yeah, of course. Would I be happy? No, because there's no guarantee. Stearns can't do a rebuild. The only time this team will rebuild, I believe, will be in 2 years if things are bad under Stearns. The next guy is going to come and say, look, Steve, we got to tear this thing down. That will be the next one. And that means that you have two more painful years and then five more painful years after that, 3 to 5 painful years. And that is a long time. And heading into a casino and an empty ballpark and a guy that has envisioned being a East Coast Dodgers, having the panache of the Wall Street crowd and the celebrities that you saw at Madison Square Garden, coming to Citi Field for postseason games. That's a long time, and that's a lot of damage done to the brand in that time. So I don't know if we'll ever get there, but with the new rules coming in, it may be, especially if there's a lot of restrictions on spending, the Mets are going to have to develop. The Mets are going to have to watch how they spend. Right now, Lindor and Soto are almost a quarter of their payroll. And that's assuming the payroll stays where it is and doesn't go down. If it goes down, they could be 30% or more of the payroll for two players. This is not the NBA. So there's where we're at. All right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, mailbag. And I'm going to start off by using Eric Chavez and some of his comments in the mailbag. Then we'll get to what you guys are saying right after this.